What is happening in Europe? The dream of a European constitution, so alive not too long ago, seems to be shattered. Last week we talked about biblical prophecies concerning a European political, economic, and military power that will play a significant part in the events leading up to the second coming of Jesus Christ. What will cause this revival of the ancient Roman Empire? How does the rise of radical Islam play a role in fulfilling future Bible prophecy? Stay tuned for part two of History of Europe and the Church.
Welcome to the Good News program, presented by the publishers of the Good News magazine. The Good News doesn't try to cover up today's problems. This is a program that dares to look at today's dilemmas and ask the questions that must be asked. It seeks the answers that must be found, answers that can only be discovered from the pages of your Bible. Please join Gary Petty for a discussion of today's Good News subject.
Welcome to part two of History of Europe and the Church. Last week we discussed with World News and Prophecy writer Melvin Rhodes, who is also a major contributor to the Good News magazine that we offer free of charge every week here in the program. We were talking about the current crisis in the EU. Now, Melvin, thanks for returning to discuss this important topic.
Thanks for inviting me back, Gary.
You know, last week we talked about how the Bible predicts a revival of the Roman Empire before the return of Jesus Christ, and many people believe that the EU is that organization. But last week we discussed how the Roman revival of 10 kings comes rather quickly. Is the EU what the Bible calls the beast power?
Not exactly, no. 10 kings or leaders give their power to the beast. There are 25 nations in the EU at the present time. However, the EU has been a necessary step towards the beast power. It has brought together the nations of Europe like nothing before it. They are today the world's biggest single market and the world's biggest trading bloc. And with the exception of the Balkans, you know, Europe has had now 60 years of peace, which is unparalleled in their history.
The book of Revelation doesn't give us an indication of why these 10 kings suddenly come together and give their power to a person the Apostle John calls the beast. We do know from the book of Daniel that there is a future conflict, and we talked about this some last week, involving Europe and the Middle East, which will actually launch what is called the tribulation.
Yes, in Daniel chapter 11, we see one of the most amazing prophecies in the Bible, a very detailed prophecy which was mostly fulfilled before the time of Christ. It's about the kings of the north and the south, the Seleucid and Ptolemaic empires that followed from Alexander the Great. There's also still a small part of that prophecy yet to be fulfilled. It begins in verse 40 with the words, "at the time of the end."
Now, maybe you could just reiterate what we talked about last time, a little bit about what Daniel 11 actually says about the king of the north and the king of the south.
It talks about a king of the north and a king of the south at the time of the end. The king of the north being this revived Roman Empire in Europe, the beast power. The king of the south seems to be maybe a union of Arab nations or Islamic nations. And it says that the king of the south will push against the king of the north. Whether that is military, whether it's a terrorist attack, whether it's an economic push in the sense of cutting off their oil, we don't know. But somehow they're going to do something that provokes the Europeans into coming together and invading the Middle East.
You know, in some ways this seems like an odd happening that history could play out this way. But it is interesting that the king of the south is the one who pushes. In other words, this comes from this Islamic confederation or Arab confederation, whatever it is, against Europe. But, you know, isn't this just part of a classical historical struggle between Christian Europe and Islamic nations?
Yes, very much so. There have been frequent clashes throughout history. The Prophet Muhammad died in 632 AD. During the next century, Islam spread in every direction, right across North Africa and into Europe through the Iberian Peninsula, Spain, and Portugal. In 732, Islamic forces were defeated at the gates of Paris by Charles Martel. 400 years later, there was conflict again between Islam and Christianity in the Crusades, which lasted about 200 years, almost as long as the United States has existed as a country. And then later on, in the 1500s and 1600s, you had the Ottoman Empire, which was a Turkish empire, an Islamic empire, that got right up to the gates of Vienna, right in the middle of Europe, and twice tried to take Vienna. So there's been this conflict between Islam and Christianity throughout the centuries.
You know, does the memory of the Crusades, does that still play a part in many of the Arab and Islamic minds?
It does very much, yes. I mean, even the word crusade is a very sensitive word. President Bush used it once after September the 11th. He's never used it again because the interpretation of that word in the Arab world is completely different from what it means when we say it here in the West. You know, the Crusaders were considered an alien presence in the Middle East, which is considered a part of Islam. And, you know, unfortunately, a lot of people in the Middle East still think that any American presence there, even the presence of the nation of Israel, is similar to the period of the Crusades.
And, of course, when we look at the Crusades, the Christian armies weren't always, the accusations that they were barbarians at times was justified?
Yes, they did not conduct themselves in a Christian manner, put it that way. For example, when the Christians took Jerusalem, they slaughtered all the Muslims and all the Jews. Later on, when the Muslims retook Jerusalem, they let the Christians go. So there's a contrast right there.
I want to cover more of this history of the conflict and what that holds for the future, but we'll have to discuss that right after the break. We'll be right back.
You need to understand what is prophesied to yet happen in the Middle East. Whether you realize it or not, or understand it or not, events there are destined to affect the lives of every person on earth. To learn more about the astounding Bible prophecies about the Middle East, be sure to request your free copy of The Middle East in Bible Prophecy. You'll be glad you did. Call right now, 1-800-966-9232. Who will write the next chapter in the history of this troubled region? Believe it or not, the final chapters are already written, prophesied centuries ago in the pages of the Bible. Ominously, they mesh remarkably well with today's headlines. In our free booklet, The Middle East in Bible Prophecy, we provide you with an overview of the past and the headlines of tomorrow. What will happen to you as these prophecies unfold? There is no cost or obligation, so call 1-800-966-9232 or visit us on the web at www.ucg.org.
Have you had about all the bad news you can take? Maybe you could use some good news. The Good News is a full-color, bi-monthly magazine that brings you the best news you can hear, and always from a biblical perspective. All literature on this program is provided free as an educational service in the public interest by the United Church of God. It is absolutely free, and there is no charge or obligation. Simply call 1-800-966-9232. The magazine is free. The contents are priceless. The number again is 1-800-966-9232. Or visit us on the web at www.ucg.org.
Welcome back to get your free copy of The Middle East in Prophecy. Write down this toll-free number. It's 1-800-966-9232. We're talking with Melvin Rhodes about the historical conflicts between European Christianity and Islam. What has been the historical relationship? We'll go back and just recap a little bit what we talked about in the last segment. What has been the historical relationship between European Christianity and Islam?
Well, Islam came into existence in the 7th century, and since then there have been a number of times where there has been a lot of conflict between the two. So the relationship has not been an easy one. If you remember, the Roman Empire divided into two. You had the Eastern Roman Empire, which became the Byzantine Empire. It lasted for over 1,000 years. And gradually, after the advent of Islam, it was pushed back considerably. And then in 1453, it collapsed. You've had this constant conflict throughout history, and so there's a lot of animosity there.
Now, how does this conflict play out in light of what we've talked about in Daniel 11?
Well, it seems as if we're going to have another conflict again between Islam and the Western world, or the Christian world, whatever you want to call it. Again, it's kind of interesting at this time, following on from September the 11th and subsequent events, the war in Iraq, the war in Afghanistan. Although in the West we perceive it in a certain way, many Muslims perceive it very differently. They see this as, again, a part of this historic conflict between Christianity and Islam. And they feel that, this is that America's presence in Iraq, for example, is the presence of a Christian country against Islam.
You know, of course, that's amazing because in the United States, I believe few Christians see this in the context of a historical struggle between Christianity and Islam.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, in the West, we have become very secular. But the rest of the world doesn't always appreciate that. And certainly in the Islamic world, they don't seem to appreciate that. And, you know, the perception is that this is a war between Christianity and Islam.
Now, there's another issue here that I think a lot of people are unaware of, and that is there's a demographic change going on in Europe that has to do with Islam. Talk about that a little bit.
Yes, it's a very interesting development. Before World War II, you know, each of the countries in Europe was almost 100% whatever ethnic group dominates the country. So in France, for example, almost all of the people living in France before World War II would be completely French as an ethnic group. But since World War II, there's been a great deal of immigration from mostly from former colonies, but also from North Africa. And so France and Germany and Holland and other countries in Western Europe have got this very significant Islamic population. In fact, Paris is the most Islamic country outside of the Middle East. 9% of the people in France are Muslim today. This was a factor, I'm sure, when France decided not to support the United States in Iraq, because if they had done, there might have been trouble at home, civil disturbances. Another factor here is that the European birth rate is very, very low, and the Muslim birth rate is very high. So the numbers of Muslims each year is increasing, and the number of French or Germans or Dutch people is actually declining. So these are demographic trends, and nobody knows for sure what they're leading to.
It is interesting. I just read recently where the birth rate in Italy is so low that within one generation, they're looking at a very severe crisis in just being able to maintain their economy because of the low birth rate.
Well, that leads to pressure on governments to allow more people in, which, of course, makes the problem even worse. You see, there's a demographic time bomb here, is what they call it, where a lot of the British and the French and the Germans and so on, as they get older, who's going to pay all the pensions for them? And so they need a lot of young people. And because they haven't reproduced much, they're bringing in the young people from Islamic countries. But, of course, that's creating more social problems. So, again, what's it all going to lead to?
Are many of these young people coming in that are Islamic, are they taking over menial jobs, or where are they in society?
Often they take over menial jobs, but then you've also got others that have very good jobs. I mean, a lot of people in the medical profession, for example, in Britain, come from third world countries, many of them Muslims. So, you know, some of them do extremely well in that society. One thing that is interesting, though, and this is a very negative trend which is becoming more clear, and that is that the second generation, the children, in other words, of those immigrants, the second generation of Muslims in Europe is the most militant generation, and they are the ones that are being recruited the most by the terrorists in the Middle East as suicide bombers or just simply to go into a military capacity against the United States and Britain and other countries.
So we're actually looking at European-born Muslims becoming part of the radical, violent group that would actually try to bring down European society.
Yes, that is definitely the case. There has been a failure to assimilate. It's very much the same in the United States, too. But it's just that there's more of them in Europe. And, of course, Europeans have a greater population density. So it's more dangerous there. You're going to have lots of Islamic fundamentalists and lots of French and Germans, et cetera, all living in the same neighborhood. So the tensions are far greater in Europe than they are here.
And once again, we want everyone to know, we're not saying that all Islamics are fundamentalists, all Islamics are violent. You know, we're not just taking a group of people and attacking them. But we do have to face that within that specific religion, there are those who wish to bring down Western civilization. And they see this in the context of a historical battle between Christianity and Islam, correct?
Yes.
We were talking earlier, before the program, a little bit about how there are many people in prisons that are actually being recruited into Islam, and both in Europe and the United States, correct?
Yes, that's true. You know, often you have, like in the United States, you have people who go into prison and they're there for a long time and they feel like they're victims, they're disadvantaged, they're, it's not their fault. That's the way a lot of prisoners feel. And, you know, this is an ideal recruiting ground for extremists. And, you know, it's easy for people to convert in prison. They don't have the pressures that they have outside. And, you know, this is unfortunately creating a big social problem.
And we've been talking about Islam, but now let's look at the other side of the coin, in that it's obvious that when we look at the prophecies of a revived Roman Empire, religion is going to play a part in that also. So what role does religion play in a revived Roman Empire?
Well, when you look at the prophecies in the book of Revelation, you see that there is a beast, the leader of this revived Roman Empire, but also a false prophet. So there is a tie-up religiously there. In fact, if you look at the whole of Revelation chapter 17, for example, you see this has been a constant theme throughout the history of Europe, because you've had this political institution, and you've had a church, which, you know, have often worked together to bring about revivals of the Roman Empire throughout history. In verse 2 of chapter 17, it's described as, in a certain way, that the church commits fornication with the kings of the earth. And fornication is an uneasy relationship. It's not like marriage, where two are committed to each other. So church and state sometimes work together, but sometimes they're at loggerheads with each other. This has been European history.
We want to talk more about this, but first we want to tell everyone how to get your free copy of The Middle East and Prophecy. We'll be right back.
You need to understand what is prophesied to yet happen in the Middle East. Whether you realize it or not, or understand it or not, events there are destined to affect the lives of every person on earth. In our free booklet, The Middle East in Bible Prophecy, we provide you with an overview of the past and the headlines of tomorrow. What will happen to you as these prophecies unfold? There is no cost or obligation. So call 1-800-966-9232 or visit us on the web at www.ucg.org.
Are you tired of hearing nothing but bad news? Well, here's some good news. You can receive a year's subscription to the Good News Magazine absolutely free. The Good News Magazine isn't a Pollyannish cover-up of today's problems. It is a magazine that dares to look at today's problems and ask the questions that must be asked. The Good News seeks the answers that must be found, answers that can only be discovered in the pages of your Bible. Today's radio program is sponsored by the publishers of the Good News Magazine. Your free subscription to the Good News has already been paid. You will never be sent a bill or be obligated in any way. Simply call 1-800-966-9232. That's 1-800-966-9232 for your free subscription to the Good News Behind the Headlines.
Well, Melvin, it looks like we're quickly running out of time, and we've only scratched the surface of this important subject. Something I want to pick up on what we were talking about in the last segment. We were talking about the role religion will play in the coming revival of the Roman Empire, and that's from both ends. Religion is going to come from the king of the south, and religion is going to play a part in the king of the north, correct?
Yes, yes.
How will Islam play in this? What factor do you think they'll play here?
Well, I think it's interesting that if you go back 50 years, for example, you know, which is when I was at school, generally it was felt that religion was something of the past. But, you know, now religion has become a major factor again in world affairs. And we've seen that especially since September the 11th. But, you know, really the beginnings of Islamic fundamentalism go back to the fall of the Shah in 79. And gradually since then, you've seen this this spread of Islamic fundamentalism throughout the Middle East. And if you had free elections in some countries, the fundamentalists would actually win the elections. And, you know, their desire is to restore, a united Islamic nation. So a number of countries could easily come together under one leader, and that would certainly fulfill the prophecy there. And, of course, the same thing also in Europe. The Europeans desire to come together, although, you know, they're very secular, but their roots, really, their common roots are in Christianity.
Now, the Bible predicts that there will be two powerful leaders who come on the world scene before Christ's return, the beast, which we've talked about. an individual who controls what is called the beast power. But the other is the false prophet. Who is the false prophet?
It doesn't say exactly who the false prophet is, but certainly false religion plays a role here. Again, when you look at the New Testament, you see that there is a true Christianity, but there was also a false Christianity that was creeping in to the early church. And you see throughout history, you know, religious movements that have called themselves Christian, that have not conducted themselves in a Christian manner. We mentioned earlier on the Crusades, for example. And, you know, out of this is going to come somebody who will bring many of these people together. If you think about the Crusades, for example, almost 1,000 years ago, the Europeans have been pushed around for many decades, even centuries, by the growing power of Islam. And then suddenly in 1095, it was a religious leader. It was Pope Urban II who called the Europeans to come together in a crusade against Islam and to free up the Holy Land for the Christian pilgrims who wanted to go and see the historical sites. We can have something similar to that happening again.
It's amazing that we're watching patterns of history come around. It's nothing new. It's been going on for a long, long time. But what you're saying, though, is that the false prophet that we see in Revelation, who leads this sort of religious revival, is going to actually appear to be leading some form of Christianity.
Yes, that would be the way that it appears to be, yes. In fact, Jesus Christ even warns true Christians to be careful not to be deceived by it.
What is the relationship between the false prophet and the beast?
The relationship, in order to understand that, you'd really have to look at the history of Europe, where you've had this relationship between church and state for 2,000 years. In the United States, there's a separation of church and state, but there has not been historically in most European countries. In fact, the church and the state have been indistinguishable from each other. However, that does not mean that the church and the state have always worked well together. Quite often, they've been in conflict. And throughout most of the Middle Ages, the church was much more powerful than any of the states were. Since the Protestant Reformation, it's tended to have gone the other way. But having said that, church and state still come together when it's convenient and when it suits them.
And of course, when we look at Europe and we see it as the cradle of Western civilization, but all we have to do is look over the last 100 years. All those Christian nations propagated some of the greatest wars and violence we've seen in the history of mankind.
Yeah, very much so, yeah, in Europe. And you know, the church really has not been a restraining influence when it comes to conflict in European history.
Why?
I think there's a number of reasons for that. One would be that a failure to understand some of the scriptures relating to war and conflict. Another is just that many European countries are different ethnic groups. There's conflict there. There's different churches involved even. Each ethnic group may have its own church. So you have, you know, the Lutheran church in one country, for example, the Catholic church in another, the Anglican church in another. And, you know, these churches have had their historical differences as well.
We can see why many people claim that Christianity historically has not truly followed the teachings of Jesus Christ, has not been a peaceful religion, but actually been a very violent religion.
That's true.
Well, Melvin, we really appreciate you joining us on Good News Radio, and we'll have to have you back again.
Thank you.
What is the future of Europe and the Middle East, and how will it affect you? For your free copy of The Middle East and Prophecy, call this toll-free number, 1-800-966-9232. That's 1-800-966-9232. And as usual, everything we offer here on Good News Radio is free of charge. We think it's information so important that we want to give it to you. This has to do with your future and what the Bible predicts will happen before the second coming of Jesus Christ. If you would like to email us here on Good News Radio, and we occasionally read mail on the air, both the good and the bad, the address is gnradio@ucg.org. That's gnradio@ucg.org. And if you would like to hear Good News Radio programs online, just type ucg.org in the search box and click on the Good News Radio icon. Why were you born? There's a big difference between grasping your future and simply going on the way you have been. The choice is up to you. For Good News Radio, I'm Gary Petty.
need to understand what is prophesied to yet happen in the Middle East. Whether you realize it or not, or understand it or not, events there are destined to affect the lives of every person on earth. To learn more about the astounding Bible prophecies about the Middle East, be sure to request your free copy of The Middle East in Bible Prophecy. You'll be glad you did. Call right now, 1-800-966-9232. Who will write the next chapter in the history of this troubled region? Believe it or not, the final chapters are already written, prophesied centuries ago in the pages of the Bible. Ominously, they mesh remarkably well with today's headlines. In our free booklet, The Middle East in Bible Prophecy, we provide you with an overview of the past and the headlines of tomorrow. What will happen to you as these prophecies unfold? There is no cost or obligation, so call 1-800-966-9232 or visit us on the web at www.ucg.org.
Have you had about all the bad news you can take? Maybe you could use some good news. The Good News is a full-color, bi-monthly magazine that brings you the best news you can hear, and always from a biblical perspective. All literature on this program is provided free as an educational service in the public interest by the United Church of God. It is absolutely free, and there is no charge or obligation. Simply call 1-800-966-9232. The magazine is free. The contents are priceless. The number again is 1-800-966-9232. Or visit us on the web at www.ucg.org. You've been listening to the Good News Radio Program, presented by the publishers of the Good News Magazine. We seek the answers that must be found, answers that can only be discovered from the pages of your Bible. To receive your free copy of the literature offered on today's program, please call toll-free 1-800-966-9232. There is absolutely no cost or obligation. 1-800-966-9232.